Great, Calvin, here we are back, and you were just talking about how all of the materials in tetrionics always combine positive and negative charges. And it is about the surplus of the one or the other which will determine the net charge that physics reckons with.
Yeah. So another way to say that is to say that equilateral geometries, because of their very shape, when you put a squared number of quanta, Planck quanta, within any charged field, be it a chem field or a Higgs boson, etc., you can't get an even number or an even distribution of positive and negative charges within that squared number. There will always be more positive or more negative, purely because of the equilateral geometries at work, the quantized angular momentum. That's important. It's that asymmetry that creates positive and negative charges. It creates the fields of interaction with differing amounts of convergent and divergent energy momenta within those fields. The arrows point towards or away. And as I was saying, whereas positive charge fields traditionally are drawn with the positive field pointing out and the negative charge fields with the negative pointing in, you can see here in tetrionics, that's not how they're drawn. Tetrionics reflects the reality of these asymmetric fields of energy momenta, the mass geometries. These immaterial fields always have divergent and convergent components. Now, in the case of a positive charge, the positive fields radiate outwards. There's more positive, but there's also negative charges pointing towards the positive, and the reverse in the case of the negative charges. The result is that positive charges repel positives and attract negative particles towards them. And conversely, in the case of a negative charge field, negative charge fields or particles repel negative charges and attract positive. This is the basic mechanics that explains Coulomb's law of attraction, or as it's termed in tetrionics, the law of interaction, because attraction is a unidirectional force. It's strictly attractive, whereas interaction better describes the convergent, divergent components that exist at all times. So the asymmetry explains where charge comes from as energy is applied. It explains the symmetry breaking in physics because of the geometry can only create an imbalance or an asymmetry between the number of quanta that are in those fields. And it also explains Coulomb's law of interaction. The right-hand side of it then says, of that illustration, basically says that we can now draw these interactive fields as shown there for every material object that has any energy of motion or any thermal energy. You have the material topology of the matter itself, and you have an associated EM field. Now, that can be a chem field, it can be a BEM field, it can be just thermal energy, etc., but it's an EM field of mass energy. So unless it's at absolute zero, which most things aren't, every material object, every material topology, every particle has a surrounding field of mass energy. Those fields of mass energy are what bring about the motion and the interactions and the why particles form and planets coalesce, etc. Tetrionics then can draw gravitational fields as a material object, a chunk of matter, not mass, of mass matter, a topology with strictly convergent arrows pointing in, which is how the Newtonian formulation for gravity describes it. I won't cover what's really happening there, other than to say, as I said just prior, that every material particle has a field of mass energy. And at the very center of the right-hand side, you can see there that that the illustration there shows a spherical chunk of matter, which of course is made of mass, but the material matter itself has divergent and convergent EM fields, the blue arrows. They are a mixture of positive and negative quanta, but they're neutral, so you don't tend to detect them except for magnetic fields, etc. And also, the sheer existence of these matter topologies, these 3D closed volumes in the ether, creates a displacement of the ether. And of course, anything that displaces energy, just like balloons displacing water in a pool, the pool will try and push back on that balloon. Likewise, the energy of the universe pushes back on anything that is made of matter or made of mass matter. Mass itself radiates freely out through the vacuum energies, the ether if you want to call it that, whereas material particles displace, physically push out vacuum energies to create a region of zero energy inside them. And because of that low pressure or zero energy, the vacuum energies that they've displaced try to push back, just like the water on the the water in the pool on the balloon. The vacuum energies of the universe push back on every side of any material particle, whatever its topology. And that's the convergent part of gravity. There's more to it than that, but that's enough to give you a basis of what gravitation is about. Gravitation is the force of Newtonian gravity pushing back or acting against the material displacement of matter, and the interactive forces created or surrounding any material object, the EM fields. Now, the only time those EM fields don't exist is when they're at absolute zero. And still, you have a material topology, so gravity still exists. Gravitation is gravity plus EM field interactions. So this is why it's important to differentiate between mass, energy per second, and matter, energy per second squared, topology versus geometry. The geometries radiate out, create fields of interaction and forces. The material topologies displace vacuum energies, and that creates a strictly convergent force of gravity. But gravitation, which is one particle attracting another at any distance, is a combination of those two forces, convergent gravity and interactive EM fields. This is why tetrionics is superior, in my mind anyway, because we can differentiate between mass energy geometries and vector forces and their associated vector forces and material particle topologies. And not only differentiate, but we can actually build all the particle topologies. And that's what 8607 is about. The material particle topologies can also be termed gravimetric topologies to emphasize the fact that it's the topology that creates gravity. Mass energy is not affected by gravity. It doesn't create gravity. It's an EM field. It radiates out. It's associated with a material object, but it is not bent by gravity. The material topologies displace vacuum energies and create gravity. And they're affected by that gravity because there's a distortion, there's an attraction, a convergent force between the two. Even at absolute zero, those two particles will still pull towards each other because of this strictly convergent force. As long as the matter topology exists and the displacement of vacuum energies exists, those vacuum energies will push back in and create this convergent gravity. the moment you add energy to that particle to raise it above absolute zero, or the moment you push that particle at absolute zero and add energies of force, you're adding mass energy to that matter topology. Those mass energies are contained within equilateral geometries, fields, mass energy geometries. An asymmetry is formed, and you have fields of interaction. You have attraction and repulsion between different charged objects. Even if they're two neutrons, the neutrons have a material displacement, so they have gravity. And even though they're neutral, they're still made up of positive and negative charges. Therefore, you add energy, they will have EM fields of a certain charge or asymmetry that will create fields of interaction. So even two neutrons can bring themselves together via their positive and negative charged fascia. The opposites will attract to not only bring the particles together, but to make them orientate so that the opposite charge fascias are where the particles bind. That's an important part of chemistry and how the periodic elements are formed. So if you see the word topology now, you know instantly that it's a 3D standing wave of mass energies. And if you see geometry, you know that it's a planar measure of energy per second, and that there is no Z component to a geometry. So therefore, EM mass is not matter. Even though matter has EM, has mass energies and is made up of electromagnetic fields. So one is, mass is a property of matter. Matter is not a property of mass. And they are quite distinct from each other, but they are all forms of energy. Energy is the common currency for mass and matter in physics. 6908 then gives us a glimpse into how these fields interact between material objects. In this case, we have two tetrions. Now, they could be two positive charges, they could be two negatives, they could be two neutral tetrions, which are commonly referred to as gluons for all the wrong reasons. That's a side issue. Whatever the particle material topologies are, tetrionics represents them as shown at the top of the page. Associated with those material topologies are the chem fields. Now, they can be, as I said before, EM fields, they can be thermal energy, they can be vector forces, the kinetic energies and the magnetic moment of a particle in motion. We can now that we've separated them as measurements of energy either per second or per second squared, geometries versus topologies, mass versus matter, we can now draw them and illustrate them and their field interactions as we do in the middle. You can see that in that middle illustration we have two tetrions facing towards each other and their chem fields. Now, these could be chem fields of motion or heat, whatever, but the important point is that the chem field of one particle reaches out towards the other and vice versa. Of note is the fact that the magnetic moments of those two particles, the mu triangles, don't have any fields of interaction because they're pointing at each other. If they were traveling side by side or parallel to each other, then they would interact and you'd have M. In this case, because they're traveling directly at each other, is their electric fields or their kinetic energy component, not the magnetic moments. So the kinetic energy squared is the energy of interaction. Within those fields, as we said, depending on their charge, whether they're positive or negative or neutral, within those equilateral geometries is an asymmetry of positive and negative Planck quanta. And if you hold your hands pointing towards each other and place one on top of the other, you basically have what's going on in that illustration. Two fields overlapping, or superposition, if you like, and where they superposition, these positive and negative quanta either work towards each other or against each other. They're either constructive or destructive. And they create either an attraction or a repulsion between these two particles, depending on the material topology's charges. So whatever the charge of those two particles is determines the charge arrangement in the chem fields, and the quanta in those chem fields where they overlap determines what sort of interaction or repulsion, attraction, repulsion we have between the two particles. Now, just to make a quick point here, those two, that illustration isn't the scale. The important point is that the chem field propagates at C. So a 1 second chem field for a tetrion will reach almost two thirds of the way to the moon if it was on the surface of the Earth. The moon's about 1.3 light seconds away. So the chem field of a tetrion is two thirds of the way to the moon. So a second one is similar. They overlap with each other, but the tetrions themselves are in the order of probably about 10 femto, 10 to the minus 15 meters in size. They are tiny, tiny objects. They're so tiny they're not even included in the standard model or contemplated at this stage. They're a product of tetrionic theory explaining how everything works. So in reality, you could have, if that illustration was the scale and it reached, and the triangles reached two-thirds of the way to the moon, the tetrions drawn there would be even smaller than a full stop on the page. These very, very tiny particles, the subatomic particles, have huge fields. It's the fields of mass energy that do all the mechanics of the universe. The material particles themselves are very tiny, very, very tiny. They are just a concentrated form of mass energy that takes up a 3D chunk of space. The real workhorse, the real way of how particles communicate, is not through virtual particles or anything. It's through these superposition fields. Material objects, because they have a 3D topology, can't exist in the same space at the same time under the Pauli exclusion. That is to say, you can't have two paper models of tetrions and put them in the same place. Physically, they cannot go together. But that's not true for the case of EM fields of mass energy. And this is the real distinction between mass and matter. The fermions, the material topologies, can't occupy the same space, but fields of EM mass energy momenta can. They can overlap, they can interact at various angles. So where the fields surround the matter, or point in distinct directions in this case, they reach out at the speed of light to objects vastly further away and operate over huge distances in order to communicate what the particle is, what its charges are. Its charge arrangement again determines the arrangement, the asymmetry of the charges within the chem field. So if it's a positive charge particle, positive tetrion, it would have a positive asymmetry to its chem field, and it would attract negative charges and repel positives. So this is the mechanism that Richard Feynman was trying to elucidate or elaborate on in his lectures. We can swap tetrions, or we can swap electrons for tetrions. This is the mechanism that electrons use to know where other electrons or other charged particles are in the region of space about them. These chem fields diminish under the inverse squared law, but all the same, they still spread out. So an electron on the surface of the Earth can still detect and be influenced by an electron on the Moon, but it's far more likely to be influenced and have its motion dictated by an electron 2 meters away from it, because the chem fields are stronger. There's no virtual particles being exchanged as per Feynman diagrams. What exists are these equilateral fields of mass energy. There's no matter being exchanged. There's no exchange of any material topology. The material topology determines the arrangement of charges in the chem field, or the mass energies, and the mass energies communicate all the information about the particle, because the energy in the chem field tells us how much energy of motion or heat it has, what velocity it has. Its charge arrangement tells us everything about the charge topology of the particle it's associated with. So all this information that's currently within QED in very complex formulas is now boiled down to two fields of mass energy overlapping and interacting at various angles. That's it. There's no spooky stuff. There's no magical or mysterious stuff going on. It's just mass energy interacting and in specific arrangements. The final thing I'll mention here is that the interesting thing is that material particles have spatial coordinates of c to the fourth, as I said. So energy divided by c to the fourth is matter, and fields of mass energy are measured as energy divided by c squared for mass. So where the two fields of mass energy overlap, we have two fields, c squared times c squared, which is c to the fourth again. So c to the fourth can be used to measure not only matter, energy per second squared, but it can also measure or rationalize superposition fields of mass energy. So again, when we use the unified field equation for these things, and you'll see this in cosmology with gravity, everything reduces back down to the c to the fourth. And that's what's in Einstein's general relativity equations, because he uses stress energy tensor, where all forms of mass and matter become a form of energy or an energy density divided by c to the fourth. This is why c to the fourth and energy works for Einstein's general relativity, because we have these matter topologies. Again, they create convergent gravity, and they have EM fields, fields of interaction, which is what general relativity is all about. The final point is that K squared, or kinetic energy, KE squared field, has the same geometry as Newton's gravitational field. As I said, it's an inverse squared field of mass energy. It exists between any two material objects, and it's in addition to the gravity that's created. So Newton's formula says that between two material objects, there exists a force of attraction, in the case of gravity, that is proportional to the mass of each matter and the distance between them. That's basically what that geometry is showing us. The kinetic energy, or the electric energy, the E field components, are inversely squared with respect to the distance between them. The material objects themselves, the more mass energy they have, the more energy of interaction they have. So all this ties in. And in fact, that illustration not only explains QED interactions, But you'll see in later lectures that it actually explains and unifies Newton's gravitational law, Coulomb's law of attraction, and Einstein's general relativity. All come out and are explained through that one illustration. So, jumping on, moving on, 69.10 is then a summary of how Tetrionics sees energy, and in particular, how energy forms mass energy and matter topologies, along with the unified field equations for all three forms of energy there. You can see in that picture there, we have, in this case, a periodic element, element 120, with its quantum levels, etc. But you have a material topology. It's a 3D shape. So it's energy divided by c to the fourth. That material topology creates a convergent gravitational force, a gravity force. I'm being very specific here. Creates convergent gravity, which is the vacuum energies pushing back in on these matter topologies made by the charges, the charge mass energies of the matter. In addition, this particle's in motion. It's moving towards the right-hand side of the page, so therefore it has an associated kinetic energy, which is the chem field. It has kinetic energy and a magnetic moment. And again, an asymmetry results in convergent and divergent forces of interaction in those chem fields. And they're measured again in a c to the fourth. So everything's a measure of, in that one illustration, you have energy in all its forms. You have kinetic energy, you have magnetic moments, you have mass energy of motion, you have material topologies, you have charges, and you have forces of interaction along with a force of gravity. All of that can be explained by differentiating or defining and differentiating mass and matter, as we do in Tetrionics. That then lets us, as 70.01 summarizes, that lets us build a complete model now, because we have a definition of a zero-point field. Physics defines a zero-point field as having an energy equal to HF divided by 2. HF divided by 2 is H nu. It's a Planck quantum. So we have a zero-point field is a equilateral triangle that we began the discussion with. It's a piece of mass energy. It's energy. Energy per second is mass. So that explains quantum mechanics. By then defining matter as energy per second energy per second squared, we can then explain Newtonian gravity as being the vacuum energies pushing back in on the material topologies of particles. And by now being able to draw and differentiate the mass energies of motion and heat of every material topology, we can show that the vacuum energies of the universe are pushing back on those material topologies to create strictly convergent gravity, and the radiant mass energies of matter create interactive forces. So when we combine the material topologies and their convergent gravity with the divergent mass energies of matter and their interactive forces, we then have special relativity for mass energies and general relativity in the case of matter with mass energies, all covered and explained. So that lets us develop a complete quantum theory of gravity. The reason why I've gone this far in the explanation is, without being able to differentiate and define mass and matter and differentiate one from the other, you can't develop quantum gravity. Einstein takes all mass and all matter and equates it back to energy under the stress energy tensor per spatial volume, c to the fourth energy, or tau, ab tau mu nu divided by c to the fourth is mass matter. But he doesn't call it mass matter, he just calls it a stress energy tensor. He then says that space time is curved. Tetrionics shows us that that's not the case. Matter is rigid, it's a topology, a physical solid topology that displaces vacuum energies, and that mass energies of matter contribute to these mass and to the vacuum energies and create forces of interaction. What's being curved is not space-time. What's being curved close to matter is the EM fields. The EM fields are creating a field of distortion of mass energy around material objects. Light is bent or refracted by these EM fields, not by the gravity. Light is a planar geometry, a mass energy geometry. It is not, it has no matter component, is not affected by gravity. Gravity only affects matter topologies. So, using tetrionics, we can now explain and unify Planck's quantum theory, Coulomb's laws of interaction, Newton's gravitational laws, and or with special and general relativity. But of course, the special and general relativity have to be re-explained as well, because of this curvature of space-time does not exist. What's being seen as a curvature of space-time is in fact an EM field of mass energy. It's a curvature of the geometry of energy close to matter. Nothing to do with space-time. But that, again, is another discussion. So, 70.02, just to show you what fields of mass energy are all about, I've created a gravito-electromagnetic field, a GEM field, and taken away the material object that creates the gravity. So think of it as a spherical region of space, c to the fourth, like we began the discussion. C to the fourth can also be divided into c squared by c squared for measurements of mass energy. But we take out the matter topology. So we're left with the gravitational force, these convergent forces that were created by the matter fields pointing inwards, the green arrows, and we have the EM fields that used to surround the material objects. This is where physics has been coming undone, because what physics does is measure the material forces, or in particular the vector forces associated with material object. We've taken the matter out of this picture, but we've left the force fields created by the mass energies there. And you can see that they point outwards in various directions. There's convergent, there's divergent, there's electric, there's magnetic. But the point here is, whether it's gravitational mass energies or electromagnetic mass energies, the geometries all converge or point back to a particular point, a singularity. The singularity is normally hidden within the matter topology. You try to get to this point when there's matter there, and you hit the surface of the matter. You can't access it. Think of it as a non-naked singularity, a hidden singularity. In this case, we've taken the matter away to reveal the singularity, and you can see that if you follow the arrows back, they all come back to that single point in the center, the point of singularity. This is where the misconceptions of black holes and point particles come from, because we're plotting the vector forces back to a point. The point does exist, but it exists within matter in most cases. And even in the case if this was just a pure EM field and you followed those lines back, what you're actually following back to, where the singularity exists, is what's termed a block wall. I hope that's the right way to pronounce it. BLOCH. It's where the electric and magnetic fields meet and swap over in the center of a bar magnet. Of course, the bar magnet has matter in it, if you were to take it out. Where the south suddenly becomes a north field, you can see that happening here, and vice versa. The north becomes the south. The positive charge field becomes a negative charge field. It's the lemmascape. If you map the quantized angular momentum as inductive loops, you have a lemmascape produced. The two omegas will circle, the energy of the two omegas will circle endlessly around in a loop, passing through that point of singularity. The fields go in and out, and if you were to drop a negative charged particle on the left-hand side of this picture and look at the convergent fields, you would see that the negative charged particle will be attracted towards the singularity, pass through the singularity, and be accelerated back out to the right-hand side of the page. And if you put a negative charged particle on the right-hand side, the opposite happens. This is the basics of black holes, etc., of singularities. But in this case, we can show that the singularities and all the features of a black hole are nothing more than the features of an EM field. And even if you do multiple EM fields around that singularity, pointing out in all directions, which is how a star is formed, in the field that a star generates, you still have the same things. So all the properties of black holes, etc., can be reinterpreted and fully explained as an EM field. So there are no black holes, there's just EM fields. Black holes are a misadventure of mathematics applied to a poor definition of mass and matter within gravity, or as an explanation of gravitational fields. And equally, there are no point particles, as in the electron is currently described as a infinitely small point charge. No such thing. They exist only in EM fields. The electron has 12 charged fascia. It has a matter topology. All these things should now be making sense to the people that have been following and listening to me labor on these points. EM fields of mass energy geometry can explain and replace black holes, and when combined with 3D material topologies, can fully account for and unify and create a quantum theory of gravitation, where black holes are banished. The processes that power the stars are completely different to that of fusion. And all these ideas of what is beyond the event horizon, or what is beyond the singularity, if you pass through a singularity in a black hole, what happens? All these things are suddenly banished, and we're left with common sense, planar geometries. And that's the real power of tetrionics. The final illustration is just a summary. and that's 70.09. On the left-hand side, it summarizes E equals mc squared as the equivalence between mass and energy. It's nothing to do with matter. E equals mc squared is mass-energy equivalence. Energy-matter equivalence on the right-hand side is E equals mc to the fourth, or E equals mc squared squared. Second, energy per second squared. All this should start to fall into place. Mass energy are 2D masses. They're geometries. Standing wave matter topologies are 3D matter. Mass, 2D mass geometries are a property of 3D matter. 3D matter is not a property of 2D mass energy geometries. Energy is a common denominator to both mass and matter, which is why relativity can use tau mu nu, the stress energy tensor, to describe gravitation. But in doing so, it completely messes up the explanation for the mechanics. Curve space, time, etc., all wrong. Even the definition of what a material object is all wrong. There's no explanation for charge. There's no explanation for field interactions, for interaction at a distance between a star and a planet. There's no explanation for transfer of information or gravitational fields faster than light in general relativity. In tetrionics, there is. Tetrionics, through the quantized angular momentum, the omega of Planck's constant, accounts for inertial mass. It accounts for the gravitational mass of matter. It accounts for forces of interaction, and it allows us to differentiate between mass and matter. And if we want, explain them all as forms of equilateral energy. The 70.01 is the final one. And it just simply shows something that should have been obvious since the days that E equals mc squared was first formulated. If E equals m times c squared, there's a logical algebraic question that arises of what does m divided by c squared equal? Tetrionics, mathematics will take you so far. 99% of the answers I get from mathematicians simply say, I say to them, if E equals mc squared, what does m divided by c squared equal? And they say it equals E divided by c to the fourth, because mass equals E divided by c squared. So mass divided by c squared is E divided by c squared divided by c squared c to the fourth, which we've already shown in tetrionics is another way of saying mass, energy divided by c squared, or energy per second light second. Matter is energy per light second squared, c to the fourth. So the question now begs itself, even under the current physics, why nobody has asked what m divided by c squared is. It's because they get an answer of E divided by c to the fourth, and they go, well, what's that? They know it's something to do with general relativity, but they can't explain it any further. Tetrionics says quite openly, as we've discussed ad nauseum now, E divided by c to the fourth is matter. Mass is quite distinct from matter. And that's where we'll close up. I will, for those that have followed this far, I'll just give you three final formulas. The three ways you can rewrite the mass energy matter equivalence. Now remember, Einstein's is only mass energy equivalence. we can now do mass energy matter equivalence because of tetrionics geometries and topologies are as follows. For energy, you can have E equals mc squared, which equals capital M c to the fourth. For masses, little m, you have m equals E divided by c squared, which is also equal to capital M c squared. So capital M c squared equals E divided by c squared. These will all be things that you can discuss with me later on, but if you're writing it down as we go, you'll see that there's a subtle difference, and all these three equations come out because we now know the difference between mass geometries and matter topologies. The final equation is matter equals E divided by C to the fourth, which equals mass divided by C squared. So we now have, we've taken Einstein's single E equals mc squared, or mass energy equivalence, and we've created three derivations of the one unified field equation. If you want to relate it to mass energy matter, the unified field equation of equivalence, or field mass energy matter equivalence, would be mc squared equals E equals capital mc to the fourth. But there's many ways to rewrite it, as I've just shown. If you were to show that to a physics professor in any modern university, they would scratch their heads wondering what the difference between the two m's were and why you're dividing m by c squared. Because even for most physicists, if you were to ask them what the c squared in Einstein's equation stands for, they'll probably give you an answer of it's a scaling constant, with no explanation as to what c squared is, which is where we began this discussion. It's a measure of, it's a spatial coordinate system for mass. It has nothing to do with matter when you go to measure it. So I hope I've covered it. I hope I've explained it, and even though at the risk of repeating myself a few times, this is an important part of tetrionics, because apart from building the models, until you get your head around this mass matter differentiation geometry topology side of things, a lot of what I say sounds like a lot of extra words for no point. There's specific reasons for the wording, and the reasons are that we create these planar geometries and material topologies. We can then define the spiritual or the immaterial aspect of physics, the forces, the energies, the masses, and we can unite them with the material particles that physics knows so well in order to create a unified model of energy in all its forms, and the material and the immaterial parts of physics. So I'll pull it up there unless you've got any other questions.
I'll gladly put some other questions on your path about this, because it's so much that comes together. And in a way, the questions are already foreseen for the sequels of this series of talks. What you've done now is to show that it is really so essential to see how electromagnetic fields, which can make matter, are different once they have formed matter. The essence is that the electromagnetic fields are still in motion and they are associated with expansions, but at the same time, in the form of matter, it is then clear that these motions are solidified. They're creating the inertia of the material topologies. But at that same time, it is clear that where we started with the electromagnetic field, We in fact started with two fields, one of them the electromagnetic field and the other the vacuum energy field, because at the moment that the matter is formed, then you can see that the vacuum energy pushes back on the material structure in what people have been taught is called gravity. And only then can you see that on these material forms there are two forces in action, one of them the gravity of the vacuum energy pushing back, and the other electromagnetic field, which is interacting in the whole universe. And you already showed that associated with matter, the electromagnetic energy then will provide something else, something new for that material system, which in a way people might consider to be the equivalent of consciousness, and that is that the material particle, inert as such and not moving by its nature because of the way it's composed, will have associated with it an electromagnetic field which reaches out enormously fast and enormously far. And it is by the interaction of these electromagnetic fields that the associated particles will already know what other particles are doing elsewhere in the universe. And as a result, there will be that foundation of precisely what my question was about. How do the electromagnetic fields and the particle interact? And I'm glad that you unraveled all of these levels of the story, because only then is it possible to see that, yes, it is necessary to be very precise about the use of word and to discern the meaning of the words, but also that in a way we are still dealing with electromagnetic forces, electromagnetic fields, which in their interaction can create matter, but then the force fields just continue in a different association. And I really look forward to the further unraveling of this whole series of discussions which you've just embarked upon, in which we can then actually come to understand in a level way beyond what physics has now addressed, what is being dealt with in tetrionics here, is that matter in itself is inert, the electromagnetic fields are always in motion, expanding, and when you see the interaction between the two, when you see how the two are based on the same essence, which you have now neatly pointed out is the energy, as it is called in physics, only then can you see how matter derives its motions from the electromagnetic fields, and how the electromagnetic fields provide for matter the quality of what we would consider to be consciousness or the extension of information. So I'm looking forward to the sequel. As always, I'd like to ask you if you would want to round this off, or if there's something else that you would like to add at this moment.
Not a great deal other than to say, as you point out there, that the next discussion, I think, is probably the lead on from where we've finalized or finished up here, which is where I'll elaborate on what radiant mass energy geometries are, because you'll hear that often when I'm discussing things versus standing wave topologies. And this is where we start to talk about what creates the inertia of matter, or the inertia, what brings about inertial mass, what brings about fields of interaction, how these fields of 2D radiant mass energy create like a carpet, if you like, on which matter is moved. It floats about. It's even though the chem fields are attached to the particular particles, they spread out over huge distances, and they create this tapestry of fields of interaction that bring about all the motion of the universe as we perceive it. So we'll talk about radiant geometries, standing wave topologies, chem fields of motion or chem fields of interaction, what they do, how they bring about. It'll be really focused on showing the mechanics, what would normally go into QED, but we'll talk about the mechanics of these radiant mass energy geometries and how they're the real mechanics of the universe. And these material chunks of inert matter that we see and we can measure are really just like grains of sand in the ocean or in a stream. It's the stream doing all the work, and if you just study the grains of sand, you can get an idea of the currents, but you're not really understanding what the current of water is and how it's making the particles move. So that's what the next discussion will be. It'll be all about how particles surf these mass energy geometries and how the mass energy geometries pull and push, create all these forces that we see in physics, and we've described in various ways. So that's a big start, and probably the third one will be where we expand these chem fields into an explanation of BEM fields and fields of consciousness.
Very promising, and I like the metaphor of the magic carpet, the tapestries of EM fields on which the matter floats. It gives something that people already know, calls back that image, but now gives it meaning at the deepest level of universal creation. And also the connection from chem fields to BEM fields to consciousness is, of course, what many people are looking for.
Yeah, there's lots of ways, but I mean, like, as we discussed, what brought this up as a discussion topic was the fact that all too often we tend to go into the juicy parts of the theoretical side and I explain how tetrionics explains things, but it gets lost in translation because people haven't had the chance to wrap their heads around what's seen as to some as a word salad, where I'm saying things like radiant mass energy fields of interaction associated with 3D matter topologies. They just say, that's a huge way of saying something. We're not quite sure what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's why a discussion like this is important, so they can get the groundwork. And then we can, once they're familiar with that groundwork, we can really get in and have some very meaty discussions on how these fields of consciousness are created. And at the end of the day, despite all these specific words and all these illustrations, it really becomes a simple case of triangles of energy being formed into different patterns. It's nothing more than that. There's complex formulas that go with it. But at the end of the day, you could dump all the mathematics and all the complex stuff and just go back to playing with the triangles. And the triangles would explain everything.
That's the whole neat part of it. And that is something everybody can immediately start with by cutting out the templates. And in that way, learning about all of what you're describing by themselves, because you played with the triangles and saw it all fall in place. And I'm really glad that you give these explanations, because in that sense, all of us can catch up with the years of work that you've already done into it. Because the progress of civilization, progress of humanity is, of course, by people sharing information. And the more people can catch up with it, and the more they can see how all of it connects, but also the more they understand that at this level of detail of cosmic creation, you do need the precision tools, which are in this case the thoughts for which we use the words. I'm really glad that you make these distinctions in large M's and small M's and large E's and small E's.
It looks crazy at the beginning, but there's a purpose behind it all.
Yeah, because you need to know what you are talking about to be able to know what you can say about it. So that is starting to fall in place, because that too, we are not just talking about how matter floats on electromagnetic fields, but we are also talking about the way our body is floating around the electromagnetic software field of our mind. And that's where a lot of people need to think differently. It is not that matter will create consciousness, but in fact that consciousness will form matter in the same way that the electromagnetic fields can form the tetrions and thus the particles and thus the atoms and thus the materials of the universe. If you start at the wrong end, you will always find the cart in front of the horse, and where can you go from then? Once you know what leads the other, then you can follow that. In this case, you're pointing out very clearly that the movement of the material field is a simple consequence of the fact that there is the electromagnetic field to start with, and then I keep on calling it the electromagnetic field can crumple up to form the tetrions and all the material field, but then you can see that it is like the froth on the ocean, which will then flow with the ocean because it actually forms part of that. And of course in classic Indian scriptures they have already described this, but now in tetrionics we can see the details of how we connect everything at the electromagnetic level, which is beyond physicality and thus beyond what we can normally describe. But suddenly we have a language to describe the undescribable, so that we can understand how the visible is moved around. I'm really glad that you did all this work. I still have a lot of gear meshing to do in my brain, specifically to de-educate a lot of the lot that I was taught and grew up with. But your presentations are actually the massage to get rid of all the lumps in the thinking that can be released and resolved.
You'll find at the end, as you grow accustomed to these terms and the way I explain things, that you'll get to a point like I have where you'll cringe where you read or hear scientists mixing the two words together through no fault or anything other than ignorance of what tetrionics can do. It's not that they're deliberately doing it or anything. It's just that once you know this sort of information and you can differentiate in your mind, it becomes very hard to listen to people just grinding it all up like somebody grinding cars in a gearbox in a car. You say, why can't you just put it into gear? But the same thing's here. I mean, once you know what mass is and what matter is, it's very hard to read through books and watch them swap backwards and forwards. So over time, everyone will catch up. Everyone will understand the geometry and the terminology behind it. And over time, we'll keep doing explorations like this and picking up points and elaborating and exploring different aspects and connecting everything together for everyone, because this is where the sweat comes in. It's one thing to do the illustrations and to work out how it all fits together, draw it up. It's another thing to spend the time explaining it to everyone so that more and more people can become familiar with it.
Yes. That is precisely what we're doing in these conversations. That's why we also make the recordings. And it seems that we are now at the end of this recording. Is there a final phrase that you would like to add to close it all off?
Nah. The only thing I could add is what we've already discussed over and over. And that is just to wrap your head around these definitions. Mass, energy, matter. You'll see it pop up time and time again in tetrionics everywhere that I write it. It's an important part, along with the equilateral geometry. Once you get your head around this particular topic, the rest becomes easier.
Yeah. So in a sense, today we've been talking about the cosmic ocean, and the next time we'll talk about flying carpets.
Yeah. And then the mysterious id.
Yeah. So thank you very much again for explaining it all. And
you're
hang up for now and close off the recording. Then I'll come back to you and evaluate us always. Thanks.
Okay.